I had to do something on Sunday that I vowed to myself it'll never happen again. It's the most gutless, embarrassing thing that can ever happen to a man. I was driving around, picking up breakfast for my wife and I, hating life, couldn't golf, and I wasn't paying attention, and my back tire just hit like the median, hanging a left-hand turn. Immediately, flat tire. And I had to call Range Rover roadside assistance to change the tire. And I'm watching this guy change the tire, and I'm like, why can't I do this? I cannot change. Do you know how to change a tire, Hayes?
I do, because I've been through it. That one time, remember, I was on my way up north to Muskoka. Yeah, and the go-kart blew out. And I had my daughter in the back. It was a gong show. And I put the little donut on. What I did not know was that you're not supposed to drive that far with the spare on.
That's a lie. I've driven months. I've gone months.
You've driven around with the donut on for months?
Months seems like a stretch. I don't think that's a lie. But, like, I think the rules, quote-unquote, in terms of what, you know, the playbook might tell you is you're only supposed to go, like, 30, 50 kilometers. Yeah. I went up to Muskoka and made it all the way home.
No kidding. You
can
go a whole season. A whole season you can go. The bottom line is I'm telling my three daughters, do not date a guy unless he can't change a tire.
It really is pathetic.
It's pathetic. But the one thing I'll tell you is the one thing that kind of scares me a little bit is the jack that I got's all jacked up and you got to twist it. This guy just had a jack and I was like, how much is that thing? He goes, probably, I'm buying one of those jacks and I'll have it done in 5 minutes. It's that easy. You just.
Well, but you got to make sure that you, like, there's nuts and bolts and you've got to make sure that like, you can't. You're watching YouTube putting that thing together. You're going to kill somebody because the wheel's going to come flying off. Like, you got to make sure that thing's on properly.
And sometimes those trucks have wheel locks, like.
Dude, when we get back to normal, we'll have a NASCAR competition. Which one of us three can change a tire faster?
I'll bet you Noodles can change it the fastest. I feel like you're the most resourceful.
I've changed tires before. On Steph's vehicle, sometimes lights, like I changed a headlight the other day. Not the other day. I would say
a headlight. What the hell? What do you have? A garage in your garage?
You know what I did? It was crazy. I watched a 7-minute tutorial on it. Because she used to have that old the Range Rover Evoque, and one of the halogen lights went out. So you can't just put in another bulb. You gotta like disassemble everything. So I watched a 7-minute tutorial on YouTube, and was able to change it out.
It's dangerous though, man. The YouTube experts, like it's I know. It's very there. Every anything you possibly need is accessible on YouTube. Like anything
you need to change. It's awesome.
It is awesome, but you can't ask the person. Like, if you get held up and you're like, wait, you can't. Like, what you end up doing is you pause it, you rewind, pause it, rewind. If you run into a hiccup, YouTube can't help you, you know, and that's the point. And sometimes you think you've got it figured out. Like, oh, I know exactly what I'm doing. YouTube showed me. It's like, well, who the hell is that guy on YouTube?
What's his credential?
What are his credentials?
What's his credentials? It's nothing.
He's got a tool belt on and a plaid shirt. Right? So it's like, oh, and a beard. So that guy clearly knows what he's doing. What if he has no idea what he's doing? There's always that possibility.
He's a lunatic and he decided to make a YouTube like channel or whatever on how to change headlights on a Range Rover Evoque.
It is a good point, though. Like, you want to watch the YouTube video and say, who the hell is this guy coming up with this tutorial?
Right.
Like, I do YouTube everything. Like, how do you fill nail holes doing drywall or whatever? I've watched it. It's just and you're looking at the guy. And now that I think of it, you should be like, what the hell is this guy?
I don't know who that guy is. Everyone's got a life hack. And it always starts with completely destroy something and then I'll help you put it back together. And you're like, what if this ends with just like a troll job where the person starts laughing and goes, now you're stuck. Like, I don't know what the hell I'm doing, but you're a gullible moron. And you just thought I would be able to figure your life out, and I can't. And this is the end of the video. See you later.
That's
going to happen at some point.
You go to start the car, and it starts on fire because he's talked you into short-circuiting something.
Anyway, right, exactly. I'll never call Range Roadside. It was just so embarrassing. The worst part was I had a bunch of stuff in my trunk, golf stuff, like clubs, an extra set of clubs, golf shoes, balls, the whole nines in the back. I take it out and put it on the sidewalk because the tire is completely down to the rim on the road, and all of the stuff is sitting there on the sidewalk. And a guy pulls up to me and he goes, "Hey, you got a flat there, eh?" I go, "Thanks, pal. What do you think I'm just..."
There's nothing better than the tipping you off that you got a flat. Meanwhile, you're barely moving. It's making sounds that it's
no,
never
I was
made
stationary.
Before.
Everything was emptied out of my trunk waiting for the guy. And I had to wait. I thought to myself, if I knew how to do this, I would be gone, honestly, in 7 minutes.
Yeah, it is something that you can get done quickly. I've been in a similar situation in terms of just feeling incredibly emasculated, where my wife, you know, she was raised by, like, my father-in-law is really a handy guy. I've talked about him before. He could build anything.
That's dangerous.
Build anything, do anything. So she grew up, you know, around his garage to an extent, so she can do some things. And she could change a tire. So I kind of learned almost through her, as you know, that's the truth. I mean, so I could do it, and I've done it before. But when we were living, you know, in Midtownish, we were at Avenue and Eglinton, and we were both leaving for work at the same time. And I'm like, in radio, I gotta get to work. So for whatever reason, we were running a little bit late, and it was cold. It was the winter, and her tire blew out. And she pulls into like a Max Milk, and she's like, "I'm gonna replace this thing." And I'm like, "Awesome, I gotta go. Like I'm out of here." And I remember leaving, and I'm going northbound on Avenue thinking, there's a chance she's going to pack up her stuff and be gone by the time I get home.
Oh, yeah.
Like there, it was probably the most pathetic thing I've ever done in my life. Where I remember calling her. I'm like, "Are you good? You want me to come back?" And by then, she was flushing my call. She's like, "Get the hell away from me." So she's fixing a tire.
Dicey one, man.
It was the most pathetic thing I've ever done. Like, to this day, I still can't believe I got away with it. Technically, I did because she's still with me. But
yeah,
it was like she was fixing a tire at like Avenue and Eglinton on the northwest side. If you know the Max is there, maybe gone by now though with the LTR going through there. But yeah, she was in there changing a tire. It was like December, cold snow, and I'm on my way up to the studio because I'm getting ready for the show.
That's tough.
Pathetic, absolutely pathetic. But that's
the truth. I'm extremely disappointed. Wow. That was gross.
That is really gross. But that got to a point where I realized next time the tire blows out, the big guy's ready. And I have never missed out on an opportunity ever since where I realized I got to get in there. I got to get into the muck and get things done. So you got to figure it out.
I took some YouTube, like even just before Christmas, I took the end tables and sanded them down and watched a YouTube clip of them getting distressed. So they looked like distressed wood. It was a process, man. I don't think I could do that again. Like it took me, I bet you it took me 20 hours to sand these end tables down and then like get them right
You're
down
like a
to
carpenter,
the bare wood.
Basically.
Yeah, but I'm not a good carpenter. Like
no,
that's the thing.
Not.
It took me.
He's a Geppetto.
Yeah, exactly. Like it was tough, man. But I changed them from like brown. I changed the handles and everything to like a distressed gray.
Look at you, like a Pottery Barn employee.
Dude, we got to see these things, because if you're just going to brag at that, they probably look like garbage.
No, they don't look like garbage. No. They're pretty cool.
For 20 hours, they better look like they should be sold for five. There it is. Actually, that's not too bad.
Not bad.
Yeah,
little wood
bad.
Shop. Little wood
yeah,
shop.
Not there bad, he is. Not
the
bad.
Little carpenter Change. Noodles. The little carpenter
But
boy.
You know where
little
they
Geppetto.
Are? We ended up getting new ones. They're in my garage.
Of course.
Like,
I'm going to
give them away. They're useless.
Are those nightside tables?
Yeah, they're nightstands. Like night.
I might be interested. I'm not gonna lie.
Okay, you guys
for your the backyard shed?
No, for my bedroom. We're moving into the rental very soon.
Okay, you guys
next week possibly broadcasting from the new studio.
I like it. Yeah. All right, we're jacked up. Playoff time, just in time for the playoffs. Perfect. Enough of this. Let's fire up some confirm or deny.
I can neither confirm or deny that that this is in fact a segment.
Boston trades Andrew Raycroft to Toronto in exchange for the rights to Tuukka Rask.
It's been my honor and a privilege to serve as the general manager of the Toronto Maple Leafs Hockey Club.
It's time for confirm or deny.
Do you regret giving all those gentlemen the no trades or no movement clauses?
I can neither confirm or deny that.
I can't confirm or deny.
And Confirm or Deny is brought to you by Don Valley North Lexus. Enjoy F-Sport credits of up to $3,000 and a loyalty rate reduction of up to 2%. Visit DonValleyNorthLexus.com for all the details and any tire issues, which never happens on a Lexus. But if it ever were to happen, Don Valley North Lexus will help you out. It's the only way to go.
Yes.
All right, here it is. Confirm or Deny. We know the way this works. A statement is made. and we either confirm or we deny it. Confirm or deny, the leading point producer in the first round of the Canadian playoffs, so we're talking the two rounds featuring the Canadian teams, the leading point producer in the first round of the Canadian playoffs will not be Connor McDavid. Confirm or deny.
Confirm 100%. I think you got to go old school 80s Esatikin and don't let the guy move, like if you're not there. I mean, take a coin flip, what happens after that, but I think the main focus, you have to be saying, I'm not letting this guy beat you. DJ Smith coached the Oshawa Generals against the Erie Otters in the finals, and that was the approach in that series. Do not let this guy beat you when we have a chance. They ultimately beat Erie. Yeah,
like
shadow him.
You're talking like a shadow.
Old school Esatikin and shadow, and don't let him beat you.
Wow.
To confirm.
I mean, it's easy to take the field, right? Because
right.
You know, somebody else can have it, but I mean, I don't know. He just like
it's a
Winnipeg.
Tough one.
Well, I mean, the goalie can steal games. The goalie can steal the series if he stands on his head. But I could see a few high scoring games there and him putting up a 4 or 5. Like, I'm going to deny it. I think he gets the points. I think what's to say he doesn't do exactly what he's been doing all year? That's 105 points.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. And I think you also got to, you have to do the math on how long the series are going to go, which is very difficult to predict. But I think there's a chance that one goes 6, you know, maybe 7. And if it does,
yeah. I think so.
You know, like Draisaitl might be a guy who could stay right there with them and just pass them. That could possibly happen. Clearly, you know, Matthews, Marner, of course, there are other guys. But I'm going to deny it as well. I mean, the way he's playing right now and the way he sets up for this series in particular, the way Winnipeg defends, Hellebuck has the possibility to do it. He's got the potential to do it. But I think McDavid's going to be a rocket starting tomorrow night. So I'm going to deny that. Confirm or deny, there was some reports out there today that Tom Brady, they might be looking at like a reality show type of scenario with Tom Brady at some point. I think Fox was kicking tires on that. Confirm or deny, a reality show featuring Tom Brady would be interesting and entertaining.
No, they got the wrong guy. It's Gronk you want to do the show with, not Tom Brady. He's getting massages. He watches video. That's not interesting and entertaining. That, like, it could be a doc. We could do a documentary, like we said
Cheater.
Earlier.
Don't get Grappler started.
Yeah, I'm just saying, like, I think Tom Brady. What did you? Are you confirming or denying it? Oh.
I'm denying that. I'm saying Gronk's the guy.
I'm confirming it because I think if you could get the actual goods, though, because Brady's, I think his public persona is just perfect. He's got PR guys walking around, you know, making sure life's good. I'd like to see the dark side of Tom Brady because I guarantee
one.
You that. I think there is. We all know the difference between public persona and private persona. Sometimes it doesn't line up.
Right, but this is going to be public persona because he's going to be able to call the shots on this, and I'm going to deny it as well. I think Tom Brady is too concerned about his brand. He's still playing too, right? And if he's the one driving it. This is a guy who had 3 Coors Lights on a boat and had to get dragged into a truck afterwards. I don't think he's raging. I don't think he's, you know, this isn't going to be a Jersey Shore type of scenario with Brady. I don't know how compelling it's really going to be. Confirm or deny, Steph Curry is a bigger draw than LeBron James tomorrow night. That
right
play-in
now?
Game tomorrow night, Steph Curry is on the marquee over LeBron James.
I am confirming that right now. LeBron James even said Steph this year is the MVP of the league. LeBron's not exactly at the top of the mountain right now in the league. He's not the LeBron we've known for 18 years. So I'm definitely confirming that.
Yeah, I'm going to confirm it as well because I think the way Steph has been playing this year, he plays a more entertaining style. Like that's saying something because LeBron is who he is and what he's done. But we missed out on Steph in the playoffs last year, right? Like he wasn't available to us. LeBron went all the way to an NBA final. I think the Lakers will win. I think the Lakers are going to get through. I think outside of Steph Curry, there really isn't that much there in Golden State. He's been that good. But there's something about him, his style of play, the understanding that he's got to put up massive numbers. I think Curry is the driving force, and that's saying something because LeBron, he sells the product himself.
Yeah, I still think LeBron's going to get it done. So, I mean, like he's going to be the driving force. Like, you know him. He's been off, and he didn't even want to do the play-in. He thought it was stupid.
Well, like, because he's in it. That's why he thought it was stupid. If he didn't, he'd be like, oh, great idea, NBA. This is awesome.
Right.
I can't
wait
to watch the – he'd be tweeting about the game, live-tweeting about the games.
Yeah, that's true.
He hates it because he's in it. Don't look past that.
But there's a – like, he just – you know he wants all the attention. If he feels like somebody else is taking it, he ups his game. Mm-hmm. I'm going with the LeBron factor.
Yeah, I think I can't wait for the game tomorrow night. It sucks. Yeah. It's at 10 o'clock. It's a 10 p.m. tip-off Eastern time. But two biggest markets on the West Coast, they're not going to mess around with L.A. and the Bay Area. Confirm or deny, Taylor Hall will re-sign with the Boston Bruins.
I'll totally confirm that. I do not know what the heck that deal would look. No, I'm going to deny it. I'm going to deny it because you know why? His play right now is just going to suck a bunch of teams in. And they're going to be buying back in on Taylor Hall again, right? A team with a solid core group, they're going to say that's all we need to complement that group. Not be the main guy like Taylor Hall has been preaching. So I'm going to deny it because I think his play is going to just bring a whole bunch of other teams into the equation and want his services. Pretty good reasoning there.
It is good reasoning, but I'm going to confirm it because I think he just thinks that's the right fit. And they'll just find the right financial situation to make it work. Like, sometimes you're like, okay, this is the fit. I mean, think of it. This guy's been in Buffalo. He's been in Arizona, you know, New Jersey.
Like Edmonton when they weren't any good.
Right. Like, I think he's looking at it going, you know what, this is a good organization, good setup, you know, and I could be a key piece of it still. So I'm going to confirm it.
Yeah, I'm confirming it as well because Boston, I think, they're seeing up front what he could bring and what he looks like in that uniform. I mean, it takes two to tango. If he showed up and played poorly, the Bruins would say take a hike.
Right.
But Krejci's numbers coming off the books, they're not up against the cap. You know, like Pasternak, right. Marchand, Bergeron making nothing compared to who they are and how they play. There's always a chance Rask could walk. Like, there could be a lot of money there in Boston.
Well, Rask is unrestricted next
year. Exactly,
like,
and Krejci is as well. So,
yeah.
You know, they got to make a call on those guys. But if one or both moves on, you got a ton of room. And I think they're going to find a way to make that work. And the way he looks and the way he's settled in there, I think that would be a perfect spot for Taylor Hall.
Yeah.
You know, play on that second line and just cruise, man. And you're going to be on a good team that wins a lot. Confirm or deny, the winning score at the PGA Championship this week will be less than 10 under par.
Oh, God, that's a confirm. I'll bet you 500's less than that right now.
I'm not betting. It's a confirm or deny. It's clearly a good line. McIlroy was what, 12 under? 13
dude,
under in 2012?
Dude, Justin Thomas said he got on the plane on the way there and it was like 8,000 yards. Although they're not going to play it at that.
Right.
Under 10 under, dude. There's just no way. Even Xander Schauffele was saying today, he's like, if you don't flight your golf ball properly in this wind here, like, watch out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but they're setting the table for excuses. That's what they're doing because they know.
Or someone to drive right through it. Like, I can see the Bryson chain. Yeah. The Bryson chain, man. If he hits fairways, he's a guy that he could shoot. He could do what Rory did in 2012.
Dude, that's what I – did you not just hear what I said about flighting the golf ball? He hits his golf ball 6 miles in the air. Not good in that wind. And
there
it'll be going –
I don't think there will be that much wind this weekend, but – okay, all right. You deny it. Or, no, what are you? You're confirming it. It's going to be under 10 under par.
I'm denying it. I think somebody gets there.
Someone gets
right. I just like
right
to see that. And I'm the guru. I've spoken. Don't
yes,
you
have spoken. Yeah. Your boy Sam Burns may be a guy that does
Mr.
it.
Mr. Burns, yes.
Mr.
I
Burns will be in the lead after 36. He always is.
Yeah.
That guy loves the lead after 36.
He loves the lead,
dude.
Waking up Saturday morning with the lead. Nobody on earth loves it more than Sam Burns.
I know.
And he's only closed once. It's still a pretty good accomplishment, but he'll be there at Kiawah this week. It's such a tough course. Like, it really makes an argument for being the toughest or one of the toughest courses that the PGA Tour is going to play. The McIlroy effect is interesting, though, because of what he did in 2012. Like, I believe he finished the tournament at 12 under par, but I'm going to be with you on this. I'm going to confirm it. I think the winning score is like maybe 7 under, 8 under par. I don't know if there's going to be that much wind, but if there isn't that much wind, then they're going to be playing the tips at about 7,800, and that changes everything.
Right.
Everything. Final one here before we move on. Kyle Lowry, confirm or deny, Kyle Lowry will sign a 3-year contract with his next team.
I don't know, man. You know what? Desperation could creep in, and he could talk somebody into saying, I want 3x20. I don't think that's even outrageous these days. And he's got that thing.
It's not with where the cap is at.
No, and it's the one thing we've always talked about, or I've always talked about, when you can say that I'm a champion recently, how much clout that has, I just think that's massive, man. Yeah, I'll confirm that.
3 years. And what is he, 37?
He's 35 right now, I believe.
Yeah, no, I'll give him three. I give him three.
Yeah.
I thought he was 37, get him to 40, and I was actually still going to think that he could get it. Depends on the price point, too. Because you can give him 3 years, but maybe he only makes two of it, and you figure out.
Maybe it's an option, too, right? Like maybe the third year's a team option, maybe a player option. You know, although if it's a player option, he's going to opt in and take it. Might as well just make it a 3 year deal. I don't think he's going to have a better deal on the table in 2 years.
That's true.
But I think that's probably that's what he's driving at, right? He's negotiating. He's talking today. It's like family's going to be important, of course. That might lean towards Philly or Miami or whatever, but they're comfortable in Toronto. Like his kids, that's all they know is Toronto.
Right.
And money. Like money, term. He thinks he can play. He wants to continue to play. So if there's a market out there for him, I could see it playing out like it did a few years ago where there wasn't anyone else out there and he came back to the table and the Raptors said, here you go. And I could see the Raptors doing it. I could see them giving him a third, you know, that third year and thinking we got to get back at it. We talked to Nick Nurse yesterday. Like they are not interested in this being anything but a one-off. Like it was terrible. It was brutal. They tanked at the end. Not going to happen again. That's not in their DNA. And I think Kyle Lowry is a guy that's going to drive, you know, the culture and the winning atmosphere. I'll confirm it. I could see it. You know, I could see it. I think he's still got game. I think that third year could be a disaster. Disaster. But you can move contracts in the NBA. That's another thing. You can move contracts. Confirm or Deny was brought to you by Don Valley North Lexus. Enjoy F-Sport credits of up to $3,000 and a loyalty rate reduction of up to 2%. Visit DonValleyNorthLexus.com for all the details. Steve Phillips will join us. We'll tee up the series with the Sox down in Dunedin. Get his take on the next 10 games where Jays are playing Boston, Tampa, New York. Alec Manoah, where he stands. We bring that up every week with Steve. We'll do it again. And his take on Tony La Russa not being so happy with his own player based on what happened last night. The old school code coming up again in baseball. Overdrive continues. TSN 1050 and on the TSN app. All right, Steve Phillips coming up here in a moment. Tee up the series with the Jays and the Sox. I'm sure you guys saw that Kevin Pilarsson last night.
Oh,
man, was that nasty.
Scary stuff.
Really scary stuff. And I guess he took a Jacob Webb fastball like right off the face, but it hit him like square in the nose.
Mm-hmm.
And he's up at the podium today. He said he feels okay. There it is up on TSN 2. Look at his face. And
that pitcher was bent out of shape too. Like he was visibly upset in the dugout. And the skip had to come over, and literally the skip was bent out of that was awful.
Oh, terrible, man. That's worst. That's a nightmare, right? Because Webb, he didn't mean to hit him in the face. You know, like it got away from him. And it's a fastball that gets away from you, and it you knew he was in big trouble, but you're almost feeling, I think, fortunate it wasn't worse. Like he's got multiple fractures in his face and in his nose. I read just before we came on, he's going to have plastic surgery soon to adjust his face, and then he can have get back into baseball activities like 2 weeks after that, and then potentially play. And he said, I guess he's on the podium down in Atlanta right now saying, I want to get back. Like, I'm going to have surgery, and then I'm going to be playing. And we know from up here and his time up here, man, Kevin Pillar is he's a gamer, but
he's
this
a warrior,
takes it to a bit of a different level. I mean, the guy looks like just went through 10 rounds with Tyson.
Yeah. Mm.
Crazy. Yeah. Here's our MLB analyst, Steve Phillips. Sure, you've seen scenes like that a lot over the course of your career, Steve, but where does that one rank for you, Pilar taking that pitch right off the face last night from Jacob Webb?
Yeah, it was pretty tough. I mean, you never want to see that. And you know, I was watching the broadcast, the Mets broadcast at the time, and, you know, Ron Darling said something that I thought was really appropriate, is that it's at a time like that that nobody wants to keep playing the game. It's like everybody just wants to stop. Like, we don't have to play anymore because none of it means anything. And both teams were really shaken up by it. And, the Webb kid did not mean to do it. It was it's a pitch that got away from him. He had tears in the dugout. He felt awful. And, you know, I think that he's going to have a tough time coming back from it. I mean, listen, the pain of it all is by far more Pilar than anybody, but everybody feels something with that. And so I think for Pilar, the idea of recovering, coming back and being the same, it's not easy to be the same. As Giancarlo Stanton, remember a few years back, got hit in the face. He wasn't the same guy for a couple of years. It took him some time to really recover because the mental part of it is there, that every time there's a breaking ball, that instinct to flinch. And, you know, I think, you know, my experience is I got hit in the head a few times when I played, and I remember waking up in the middle of the night, like jerking and flinching, thinking that a ball was coming at my head. And so, you know, there's going to be some PTSD as part of this for him as well. It was scary. And here's the other thing is I don't let him walk off the field on his own. I've never understood that. When there's that significant a trauma, I understand that he may think he's okay to walk off, but I think you've got to protect him against himself. If he collapses, then what? You know, then you've got another injury on top of it. But, you know, listen, he is one tough son of a gun. It's the third time he's been hit in the head. Twice in the face, got hit in the jaw a couple of years ago with the Jays. And then he got, I guess, with the Giants. Then he did get hit when he was with the Jays too. So he's been through it a few times, but this was as gory as we've seen in a long time.
Steve, what did you make of Mercedes with the 3-0 count, big lead, and he takes it deep? Tony La Russa came out with comments today saying he sounded like the Godfather. He's going to have to deal with his family in the club. I don't know. Just the whole scenario.
there's going to be consequences. I mean, holy cow. Like, I'm thinking Scarface and stuff.
Right. Settle down, Tony.
There's going to be consequences. I mean, look, at a point when the opposing pitcher is a catcher, I don't know. I mean, I understand that it was 15-4 and he swung and he hit a home run. You shouldn't do it, but I don't know if you got to tie him up from his thumbs and torture him at all for what he did. It's probably not the right thing to do, but I think at that point you think to yourself, well, it's turned into a bit of a joke right now. The opposing catcher, plus Oscar Dio, is so funny looking on the mound. He's 5'9" and about 260, and he's out there pitching, throwing Ephus pitches, and everybody's sort of smiling and giggling. And I think he got caught up in that. So I don't think it's Bush League. I think it was a mistake. You probably don't swing there. But, you know, it's not like, you know, he was swinging 3-0, a pitcher on the mound. This was a catcher pitching. And so I think it's not the right thing, but I don't think it's the most egregious mistake ever made.
Well, Steve Phillips, our TSN MLB analyst and insider. So the Jays have a massive stretch that begins tonight. They've got series against the Sox, and then you've got four against Tampa, and then you're at Yankee Stadium taking on the Yankees. So your next 10 games are against Boston, Tampa, New York. And they still haven't played Baltimore, which I don't know what they're doing. I don't know what the schedule makers are up to here. But at some point, they'll be able to lick their chops and take on Baltimore. But this is it, right? I mean, ultimately, when everything shakes out at the end of the year, generally speaking, in a division like this that is this tough and it's going to be grueling all season, what your record is against the American League East is probably going to be the determining factor. They know that, but they've got to pounce, and this is a big one to start because the Sox offense just simply has not been slowing down.
Yeah, no, their offense has been swinging the bats well. And, you know, you've got to keep Xander Bogaerts off the bases and in the ballpark and J.D. Martinez. If you can do that, you got a chance to beat them. And because they don't have great pitching, you're going to score. You've just got to make sure you don't give up too much. So run prevention is going to be the most important part of it because they're going to score. The Red Sox pitching is not great. I think the Jays offense could take advantage of that. But you're right. This is a big stretch for them. Now, it's not do or die, but it's important. And 100%, you know, intra-division play, when you're playing teams 19 times, and it's that significant a portion of percentage of your schedule, it is critical. Now, you know, the Red Sox aren't playing as well as they did early in the season. This is the time to get the Yankees right now. You've got Stanton on the IL. Cole came off of a loss. And, you know, LeMahieu's not swinging it like he has been. And so they've played, you know, they've won like 11 out of 16, but, you know, that was Stanton was healthy, and now he's on the IL. Now Judge has gotten hot. He's got to contain him. So, you know, and the Rays, listen, the Rays are playing better baseball, and, you know, they sweep the Mets and beat them up a little bit, and at some point they're going to call up Wander Franco, their young shortstop, and he'll be a factor. But they can be beaten, too. And so, you know, the Blue Jays are a tough team. I think every one of those other teams are thinking, geez, we got to play the Blue Jays and we've got to play the Red Sox. And, you know, they're saying the same thing because Toronto has clearly made it a statement that they're every bit as capable as those other teams right now in this division.
Well, their bats are alive as well. I mean, their numbers are not exactly where Boston's have been throughout the year, but they are coming alive. And Marcus Semien playing a big role in that. He's moved around the lineup a little bit. He started the year in the leadoff spot, then moved back because I think at that point he had to. He was ice cold. He could not get on base. But ever since they moved him back in the lineup and now back again up into the leadoff role, his numbers are off the charts. Like, he is really looking like he did a couple of years ago in Oakland. And they took a flyer on him because he had a down year last year. It's a one-year deal. I think they paid him $18 million. But if he continues to play at this level, right, and he's a guy, he's a utility-type guy in terms of the infield. You can move him around, which they have at times already this year. Incredibly beneficial. And it appears as if the Jays really stole one here off the market in terms of kind of buying low. And now I think it's already paid off. And if it continues, Steve, I mean, they're really – laughing all the way to the bank with the way Semien's been playing.
Yeah, so, you know, not having to give the multi-year deal, the $18 million is a lot of money for anybody. I mean, LeMahieu's, you know, got his deal, and he's making $15, $16 million a year. But I will say that where I look at Bo Bichette and Vladdy as more the most valuable players, I think you could say Marcus Semien is the most important player. There's something about him that offers stability. It just feels like he's always in control. A pop-up in the outfield looks like it might be a tough play. He goes out there, easily makes it, and he always has that look on his face like nothing bothered him, everything's okay, we got this under control. And I think for a young team that can be emotional, he's so important. He is effectively the Blue Jays' DJ LeMahieu, right, where, you know, hitting for a good average, but that steady, solid performer. You can play him at short, you can play him at second. You know, LeMahieu can move around the field, and so he's the counter to that for the Jays, and really important. And who knows? You know, look, they may decide that this will be the format and structure they go forward with. Maybe they don't go get one of those big shortstops. They let Bo continue to play there. They get Semien as that stabilizer. I don't think it'll take the 6-7 year contract for him that the other guys are going to get. But the thing we got to keep remembering. Oh yeah, Springer is part of this team too, right?
Right.
Like, I think he's
we
still
think.
Part of this
right,
team.
We think.
I know. I mean, I remember we talked him the night he's going to come in, and it's going to be great, and the lineup. And so this team can score, and they're going to get better as soon as he's in there and ready to go. And I'm sure they're going to be cautious and take their time with it. But, you know, the Blue Jays' offense is great. They're going to get Springer back. They're pitching. They have more guys to go to. Like, I don't know. Honestly, it's really interesting to me and surprising, and they've said this, that they really like the pitching depth in the organization. They keep going and bringing up a new guy every other day, it feels like, and those guys are all pretty capable pitchers. And so, you know, we'll see where it goes. I know Manoah's down at Triple A now pitching real well. They've got to get Pearson right, but I think you have to feel pretty optimistic because they've had a lot that has gone wrong. But it still feels optimistic for the Blue Jays at where we are right now.
Steve, how did you approach guys like Semien? I mean, you did mention the value. There's a lot of money being paid to him, but it's the one-year deal. It's kind of taken a flyer. When this guy goes out to bat, are you literally, as a general manager, just closing your eyes saying, I'm not letting this guy trick me into thinking that he's getting a long-term deal? Or how did you approach it?
Yeah, it's good. All right, it's good. Good thought is that you've got to keep emotion out of it. And, you know, and so I wanted him to play as great as he possibly could. And because that gave me the best potential now. If for some reason I was, you know, they fall out of it, he's a trade chip. Yeah. And, you know, I had an owner, it was interesting. I had an owner who would say, you know what? I don't know if we want to trade for this pending free agent, because if he plays well for you, then you're going to have pressure on you to sign it. And I'm like, isn't that the goal, to get a guy to play well for us? I said, if we have to walk away from him in free agency, I'll take the hit for it. I'll go out there and say, you know, it's not the direction we're going to go. We're going to go in a different direction. If we can't, if you think we can't afford him, but if he can help us win right now, yeah, but I don't want to take the pressure of you know, bringing in a guy. He performs well for you, and then what are you going to do? I'm like, well, I don't know, win? And so I think it's great, and I think from the Jays' perspective, at the end of the year, Simeon's going to have a really good experience with this team to where it's going to be a viable option, but I think they'll probably go to free agency and let explore and see what's out there, knowing that, that there's a good relationship that they could always bring him back later. So I'm not going to worry about it. I'll make the right deal and not chase a deal, even if he plays great, because I know if I don't get him, then I'll invest my money in another great player in this offseason.
Well, that and that appears to be the way business works in pro sports, right? Like, you commit to your core players, and then every year you got to go out and find value. And even if it is at a big price tag, like you mentioned, Simeon's making $18 million. He's not here making league minimum or anything like that. He's getting paid. But it was a one-year deal. It was later in the offseason, and they clearly made the right call as of now. He's fit in beautifully for them. In terms of their staff, I mean, it continues to come back to it. We know that Ryu's going to be there. Matt's they're committed to. Ray they're committed to, and appropriately so. It's the back end of the rotation. They've had Anthony Kay go through a couple of times. He's been fine. Stripling had a good outing his last time out. But those are the two guys who are going to have to fight for their position. And Alek Manoah, I think, is in the background. Who knows with Nate Pearson? And then there's always the trade deadline. Is that the way you would see it at this point? Like, two of the five are open to discussion and potentially could be moved in or out depending on what else is there and how they feel about different pieces.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that you know, they've got to be pretty comfortable with Ray and Matts. I mean, you know, look, Matts is a guy that he's going to give you a clunker every once in a while, and you can't run away from him. And, you know, there's just that thought. Left-handers take a little longer to develop. We're seeing it with Ray. We're seeing it with Matts. And Ryu's even that kind of guy a little bit. That, you know, it took him a little while to really get locked in because what he is right now wasn't what he was when he first was with the Dodgers. And so he's emerged. And, you know, out of that next group, what I like is they've got a nice collection of other guys to consider. And I would suspect that out of that other group, that one and hopefully two others can really emerge and even maybe move up a little bit in front of Ray and Matt in that rotation. You know, if they can get Pearson locked in, I mean, he's got the stuff to do it. He just needs to have the conviction of his pitches and the confidence to go out there and attack. And he's not real experienced, and they're going to have to nurse him through it a little bit. But, you know, they've got the bullpen that gives them a lot of different options. I love the bullpen. I think they got a lot of good weapons out there. And if they get Merriweather back at some point, maybe he can be a factor there with Romano. And DeLeese will be back at some point soon, too. So, you know, I think they've got a lot of inventory. And that's kind of what the Yankees did, right? They collected pitchers. And then what you do is you throw them up against the wall and see who sticks. And that's kind of what the Jays are doing now. Give it a lot of different guys opportunities to make starts, to see what they can do to get somebody locked in, and then they'll ride the hot hand.
Well, it's going to be a fun one tonight with the Sox in town. Again, the next 10 games are against Boston, Tampa, New York. This is a big stretch of the season for the Toronto Blue Jays and all of these teams, quite frankly, because they're all right around the same spot in terms of the standings. It's going to be a fun one. Enjoy it tonight, Steve. We'll do it again soon. Thank you for this.
All right. My pleasure, guys. Thanks.
There he is, Steve Phillips, our TSN 1050 MLB insider. Jays Boston tonight. And eventually that home field advantage is going to kick in. I mean, it's actually really going to start in baseball because, you know, the Raptors, yes, they're not playing at home, but there weren't fans in the stands anywhere else in the NBA. And if there were, it was a scattered few. It really wasn't right. That relevant, and I don't think it had any impact. You know, the NHL, yeah, down in the States, you've had some fans in the building at times, but not to the point where it's really going to make that big of a difference. We're going to see it now with fans in the stands south of the border, but it's an even playing field up here. Mm-hmm. But with baseball, it's coming. You know, like the Jays, whether they're in Dunedin or Buffalo, there's only so many fans they're going to get. Only so many of them are going to be true Blue Jay fans.
And they're not in a big league park.
They're not even in a big league park, and we're weeks away from Yankee Stadium having 40,000 people and Fenway having 40,000 people and every stadium in baseball being packed, you know. And
I wonder if these politicians up here watch this and say, oh, wow. Like, the only place you can't do that is here, just like golf, just like all the rest of it.
Yeah. I don't even get the impression like it's in their wheelhouse. You know, like at some point they're going to have to make a call in the NHL, right, in the Stanley Cup playoffs and that one final team left that's eventually going to meet American teams. But it's so far down their priority list, or it appears that way anyway.
No, I know, I understand that. But just the reason for all of it that we're so far behind is just, it's not our fault. Who's making the decisions on that? Do they ever think about that?
Well, they're not.
There's no way in hell we should be that far behind.
No, you're right, but I mean,
Christ almighty.
We can't rehash it. I just had to block some turd that was chirping me because he was like, I said we're 6 months behind, and he's like, oh, your ass kiss. Like, that's not kissing ass. That's the truth. We're 6 months behind the U.S., are we not? Maybe more.
Well, ultimately, it comes down to making a decision in terms of what is allowed or what is not. You know,
right.
Like you don't have to be 6 months behind if you don't want to be. That doesn't mean it's the right move.
Right.
Right. But like ostensibly, you could step up to the podium today and say, "Forget it, we're wide open." Like you could do that if you're a politician. They're not going to. But if you do that, then we'd be ahead of them. we could be ahead of them as of today.
Yeah. Not happening.
No, it's not going to happen, clearly. But, you know, at some point, you got to take into consideration the one dose, as goofy as that is. It's like a car with two wheels. I mean, you need the double dose.
Exactly.
But the one dose is flying. I mean, up here, we're moving in a pretty good direction coast to coast in terms of people getting vaccinated. The numbers are way down, relatively speaking. But
so I got to get back to sports, Hazy. I got to get back into sports and a sports fact. Your boy, Zach Zalatoros, he finished T17 last week.
Oh, did he?
And
I thought he missed
the cut.
I was convinced he missed the cut.
I know. Grappler sent that to me, and I thought I would just let that, like,
I had
let
no
that
idea
die
that he made
there.
The cut. Because it was such a goofy leaderboard where guys were missing.
And
there
you
were
couldn't
500,
watch
600.
It on Sunday. It was a mess.
This weekend, I was tinkering so much, it was crazy.
You said it was a tinkering fest on your street.
The Gretzky of tinkering. I love
it. It was the Olympics in my neighborhood. Every single guy was outside. Like,
what about our guy?
Yes, he was out there. Beers. He had a Caesar cooking at around 11:30 on Sunday morning.
He's a veteran.
And I saw him at one point come out. He had like a beer stack. Like he came out of his door and he was ready to party. That was around 4:30 in the afternoon. He's just
this
setting the
weather.
Tone.
He probably gets into his element.
He loves it. Loves being out there, stopping chats. He's a man of the people. And I'm lucky. We got some great neighbors and everyone's out there. Just some guy was sitting there working on his lawnmower for like 2 hours and they never cut the lawn.
Like, because there was nothing wrong with it.
No, it's just I'm just checking it out, just outside checking out the lawnmower.
Took it apart and put it back together. That's basically what he did.
Basically, so he's not inside, right? He's just like, I'll go outside and tinker for a bit with the lawnmower. Yeah. Not mowing the lawn, but just a little tinker. Yeah. Okay. Good. Good stuff.
Exactly.
That was one of the Olympic events over the weekend here at the
King Daddy Conference. Topper is the no-no that just waters the driveway.
Yeah. 7:30
like,
in the morning.
I can't go inside. I cannot do it.
Yeah. And it happened multiple times a day, 7:30, 12:30, 5:30.
Yeah.
Got to get out there and just water some things.
Don't mind a clean driveway. Cement. That's impressive.
You've got to water
it. If you're going to power wash it is one thing, but watering it is just not wanting to go inside.
It doesn't do anything. Watering a driveway doesn't do anything. It's going to rain like tomorrow. There's no point. Yeah. We'll come back and tee up the slate of Stanley Cup playoff games tonight, the play-in games in the NBA as well. It's going to be a fun night in the sports world, and the Jays, of course, in action as well. We'll continue to tee that up. Overdrive continues, TSN 1050 and on TSN 2. All right, so it is official. If the Leafs and Habs get to a Game 6, there will be 2,500 people in the stands at the Bell
Center. I honestly think that's like a move to try to just spice it up a little bit. You know what I mean? I don't even think they want to do that. It's just like the rivalry. They want to say, we got that going for us.
Well, I give them credit. You know, I give them credit. I don't know enough about what's been going on in Montreal and Quebec. I know Montreal's had tough times in terms of dealing with COVID, and they've had a curfew for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
But I give them credit. Do I wish it was in a position to do that in Ontario? Yes, but I'm not going to yell and scream. And the Ontario government's not going to react and say, okay, fans for Game 7.
Not even close. That's why they partly in reason why they did it.
Yeah, it's a little bit of a needle. And, again, 2,500 people, I don't think that's enough to turn the tide, but it's something. It's something. And
take
and,
something.
Know, yeah, it's better than nothing, absolutely. But it's got to get there, right?
Yeah.
The Habs got to get to Game 6. So we'll tee that up more tomorrow. And we got Canadian content tomorrow night with the Oilers and Jets going on. We got the Jays in action tonight, three Stanley Cup playoff games, play-in games in the NBA. It's going to be fun. It's PGA Championship week. We're all over that. It's been a fun one this afternoon. We are out of here. Enjoy your evenings. Enjoy the games. We are back tomorrow at
4 p.m.
We'll chat then.